This is a Crowd podcast.
Michael Owen. Footballer, pundit, horse trainer, film critic, competent golfer and boxer, big fan of The Weakest Link, plus, of course, author. We've learned so many things about Michael over the past weeks, but let's see what the book club thought of his 2019 book, Reboot, in the final part of our Michael Owen trilogy on this week's Football Book Club!
Book.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Alfred Tennyson, more Barry Venison.
That is pretty good.
It got Jack. Thanks to Stuart Dunn on Instagram for that
Barry
one.
Who was Barry Venison?
He used to play for Southampton. I think he played for England once. And he
sounds like a piece of cake
Premiership. Was it the Premiership it was called? On ITV with Gabby Logan in the morning? Anyway,
so you're asking, the top league in the Premier in England.
Premiership?
Barry Venison.
I'm not buying it. I'm going to make one up next week that's like Jane Austen, Dave Gostin. He played for Port Vale in the 70s. You don't know any different, do you?
It might not make the cut, I'll be honest. I've been saying quite a few. I'm not sure that's going to make the cut.
Sounds just like a guy saying, I'm called Mr. Meat. Hello. Welcome to the Premiership. I'm Mr. Meat.
You've thrown me with Mr. Meat. I'm James Bug, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as David Platt's Achieving the Goal and Dennis Wise, the autobiography. But today we're reading the final part of the Michael Owen trilogy, and joining me as always are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
Natasha Daniels.
Oi, oi.
And James Bowden.
Hello.
You're so rowdy today.
Yeah, what is all that noise? That's what I want to know.
What's the atmos?
What's the atmos?
We're in a pub.
We're in a bloody pub.
We are in a pub.
I'm looking into your eyes right now.
It is crazy how close we are right now.
It's uncomfortable.
Very, very close.
2 metres.
We're joined by producer Joe here as well.
Yeah, producer Joe's here.
Producer Joe's here. It's a fun start.
Probably can't hear him under the... The sound of rowdiness behind him.
As I mentioned last week, it was important that we celebrate our last episode in style. So we all come to the pub, we've got a drink, like the old days we used to do in Football Book Club.
Yeah.
It was more about getting pissed than reading the books.
It really was. You used to get into your room, down a bottle of wine. We'd get as close as possible.
I'm so glad I joined after this stage.
Right. Dahl. James would come in with a bowl of Dahl and say, get some Dahl down you. Have a glass of wine. Now we'll talk about Darren Huckabee.
Nothing about this.
We literally did sit in your bedroom getting sweaty. That is what we did.
It's true.
It actually did.
Right,
do
let's turn this down. We might have to go back to those days. It doesn't work out. Crap.
I'm carrying it.
Right, guys, we're almost there. We're on our third book. Mm. We've had young Michael Owen in 2001's In Person. We've had slightly older Michael Owen in 2006 Off the Record, which was last week. And now we complete the Michael Owen saga with 2019's Reboot.
Reboot.
How are we feeling?
I'm so glad I've had a pint before you've asked me this question, because now I'm going to say I'm very proud of us. I think we've done a really good job.
You have done a good job.
I feel like we're in the home straight, and I can see the guy with a tinfoil blanket.
Coming to you.
Coming to me. Like, I'm going to get it over you. Make sure that your legs don't fall apart. You know, the end of a... What are they called?
A marathon.
Yeah.
What are those things?
What are they called?
When you put something in the oven.
Yeah. I feel like a baked potato.
Yeah. Okay. James, you excited?
Yeah, I will say we were pretty jaded by the last one, all of us. And it's rejuvenated me, this one.
I liked it. I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you on that. We'll come to that more later. So not only are we covering the Newcastle Stoke Man United days with this book for you.
The Stoke Day.
Which, of course, Tash, I hope you weigh in on that. That's going to be exciting. But this week's book is a very different book to the ones before. It was nominated for Autobiography of the Year at the 2020 Sportsbook Awards. Can I get an ooh?
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh.
I don't think we've ever had a pantomime feel. I don't think we've ever had an award nominee, never mind.
I think Stephen Gerrard's was nominated. And I think he might have won. I think it might have won for being a good book.
That's a surprise. It won the Booker Prize that year. Yeah. It was that one, Life of Pi, and they gave it to Stephen Gerrard.
Furious authors.
But as Michael says on the back of the book, you may think you know my life, but this is the story I've been waiting to tell. It's my time to
to set the record straight once and for all.
He's also on the back, he's hugging the Ballon d'Or. I will say that.
Oh yeah, I didn't notice that.
And also the Ballon d'Or looks like it's on top of a rock.
Yeah, like marble kind of thing. Yeah. That's pretty fancy, I think. So I think we're going to get a different Michael this week. The one we've been having, the polished Michael we saw last week and the polished one the week before. I'm excited for Bad Boy Michael. You know, the baddest thing he's done so far is eat a Dairy Milk before a match. So how are you feeling? You guys, yeah, you looking forward to Bad Boy Michael?
Yeah.
The thing about all these books up to this point is that they've all been about Michael trying to win the books. I stand by this. I've said this before. I stand by this.
Yep.
This is the first time when I feel like he's let us in.
He has.
He's been vulnerable.
Yep.
And I'm not ashamed to tell you that by the end of this book, I actually shed a tear.
No way.
I genuinely did. Wow. It felt really emotional by the end.
Oh my gosh.
I felt like I actually understood who Michael Owen was by the end. I can't believe it.
I don't know if this says more about you or me, but I did not have that reaction.
Really? Interesting. No. Okay.
I was right in the middle. I'd say I think I know what you're talking about, and we'll get to it. But
the last line,
the
got
last,
me.
It's probably the best.
Weirdly, the last line really got me.
I think it's
good,
the best last page of a book.
I totally agree.
Big read suckers. So he's led us on for three books drivel, and then one last line, and you're
it was all
like,
worth
oh,
it for that bit.
Him.
To be fair, like it is definitely a Stockholm syndrome thing as we're talking about. Like when James last week was being like, "Oh, I think he's great. I love him." That's my James impression, apparently.
That's good.
Yeah, thank you. And I was like, "Shut up." And now I'm actually, I think I might be
with me. You're with me.
Well, there we go. There are aspects on it. He's a complicated man.
Who, me or Michael?
Both.
Yeah.
He's a complicated man.
A bit like, but anyway, that's the last line of the book. Let's read the rest of Michael Owen's reboot. Over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll have a dramatic reading, quiz at the end, and Ken's back with his chart challenge, which I'm going to have to sing in front of this whole pub.
I'm excited about that.
To look forward to. But first, let's see what Amazon is saying. The book has 4.4 stars out of 5 from 500 reviews.
You know what? That's good.
Very impressive.
Was it 4.3 last time from 300?
Yeah,
I think it was
up.
Pretty good timing for it to come out, though, because there's a lot of like men locked up in lockdown thinking, oh, what shall I read?
Yeah.
Are you saying that Michael Owen made the pandemic happen for his book? Okay, cool.
I'm surprised it got that many reviews, to be honest, because I'll admit when I was reading it, I thought, well, it's all well and good saying this stuff now, but does anyone really care now? Is it a bit too late? But clearly they do care.
Yeah, people do. I mean, you know,
it's blooming Michael Owen. It's Michael bloody Owen.
Yeah, come on. But anyway, it's got 4.4 stars out of 5, and there's a story about that, because according to Alexander S., in his 5-star review, he says, 1-star reviews, a bitter Newcastle fans jumping to ruin a book they haven't even read due to a couple of headlines in tabloids. Just because you don't like a player doesn't mean the book is rubbish. So he's suggesting it should be even higher.
I think that's happened quite a lot with these books.
Yeah.
But I do also think there's probably quite a lot of Michael Owen fans who've said that it's 5 stars.
There's more, to be honest. There's more. I've got a few here. Okay. It really just caused a debate on the Amazon page. It was unusual.
Wow.
Patrick Stewart? Patrick Stewart said, Owen's arrogance is astounding in a 2-star review. Connor says 5 stars in his review titled, Why on Earth Would Michael Go to Newcastle? And Dan says in a 5-star review, I don't normally read books. I have a very busy lifestyle and don't have any time to read. I found myself with a free evening one night, and after reading a number of extracts and news articles from this book, I thought I'd actually give it a go. I am so glad I did, but what did you think about it? Did you find it
suffice? Wait, no, hang on. Can we go back to that person?
Yeah, sorry. Let's go back to Dan.
Did they stitch together reading this book through news articles?
I guess. I think they probably saw a few of them.
There was a lot. What are they, press coverage like a slow, around it.
Serialized. Like Far From the Madding Crowd in the old days.
Or people are like, oh God, I can't wait to read more of the Michael Owen reboot.
I have to say though, when we got to this one, I was so sick of reading bloody Michael Owen. So I thought, I'm going to get the audiobook, right?
Oh, cool. Oh no. So okay, well, you got to do the impression.
I got the audiobook. And then when you get the audiobook on Kindle, it adds to your Goodreads. So it came up on my Goodreads that I was listening to Michael Owen's autobiography.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
So then I had a look at the other reviews on there. And someone just summed up exactly how I felt about this audiobook in one sentence. Because he says, pretty good as biographies go, although that bloody narrator Robin Morrissey should stick to just narrating and not try and do impersonations. He tried to do Sven-Göran Eriksson and it was bloody dreadful.
Oh my
and
God,
I didn't stick it out that far, but now I really want to go and listen to Sven.
Why? That sounds great. James, you're pretty good at impressions. You got Sven?
Michael.
It's either Sven or Dracula.
Like Igor, yeah.
Michael, you will not play.
Yeah. Are you fit for Brazil?
That's basically how he talks.
Yeah, it's pretty close. Pretty much. What do we think, though, James?
About the reviews?
No, about the book. About the book, you were kind of, you've been wanting to like Michael throughout this run.
I think it's quite harsh to call him arrogant. I can see where that comes from, but I think he's been stifled almost. And when he wrote the last book, he couldn't say exactly what he wanted to.
Yep.
And now he's like, right, I'm just gonna. This is more off the record, like setting the record straight.
Yeah.
This is what I actually think about that time. I didn't have the version with Newcastle in it when you read it. I'd be interested.
Oh,
to know
the last one, it in
the last one. What he said in that, because obviously he's very clear about what he thinks about Newcastle in this one. So, I don't know. I think it's a good book. I'm glad that he did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it. I thought there was going to be more than that.
I can see why he comes across as arrogant at times to some people, but...
But I think that's just... That's only the views of
Peacock. I feel like he doesn't quite understand how books work. Yeah. And like he thinks that he's released this third one and the other two disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's a very good point. Yeah. No, that's true.
And he does reference the last book a bit and sort of goes, well, at the time, basically says that.
I'm like, yeah, but you did publish it, though. You didn't know that.
It made me feel really bad about reading the second book. I was like, what the fuck was the point of that?
Yeah.
So angry.
Yeah.
It did make me see him in a slightly different light, though, and I've sort of warmed to him more after this book. So,
yes. Yeah, I totally agree. And it's interesting you mentioned the title thing, because what do we think of the name Reboot? I mean, I don't really get the whole hacker. It's got the, so people haven't seen it. It's got him on the front cover in a hoodie.
And it looks like Kermit, Bad Kermit.
Bad Kermit. That was the working title for it.
Yeah. And then there's like binary things in there and stuff.
It looks like a early noughties hacker thriller. Yeah. That's what it feels like. It feels like Ethan Hawke should be in this movie.
Yeah,
being
show.
Like, I got to get into the mainframe. Tap, tap, tap.
Yeah,
I'm in. Michael Owen, reboot.
It looks like he's just nicked it out of a safe on the back.
Yeah. It's a bit... See, that aspect of it is a bit cringe. It also looks a little bit Michael Owen's in 8 Mile.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does.
Mum Spaghetti, obviously, is on the front. Like, it's not... It's really weird because the book itself, I think, is very good. And actually, he kind of... The reason that it's called Reboot actually comes pretty, like, quite late in
the
book.
Yeah, it does reveal
and
it at
actually,
some point.
He does reveal it, but for 300 pages, you're like, why have you called this book Reboot?
I totally agree. And I guess with the context that you know that he didn't really want to write those other books, it kind of makes sense.
It sort of makes sense, but he's explicit later on. I think we'll get to why he calls it Reboot later on.
Listen ahead if you want to find out.
I've had too much alcohol. So
half a pint.
we can watch how much alcohol you're drinking.
Not enough to justify that weird laugh. Anyway.
You enjoyed it, though?
I did. So obviously had a very traumatic couple of weeks. It's a very fraught relationship between me and James right now, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you agreed to join up today.
I was pretty angry about the first one, the Trickle Law book. I was more angry about Off the Record.
Yeah.
I was a lot of harsh words were said on the podcast and after the podcast, down the phone or via WhatsApp. I considered going around to your house as well. Didn't.
Well, I'm glad we weren't like doing this.
Genuinely,
I think there would have been a bust up over the
table.
We
have been trying to keep our distance, obviously, social distancing. I'm
I didn't
not
know
sure
you
we're
guys
able
were
able
going
to.
Through such a difficult time.
You knew.
I knew.
What I will say here is that this book almost makes those two books work.
Oh, that's good. That is good. Tash.
I absolutely hated it.
No
really?
Way.
What? Fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually preferred number one.
Oh, no, you didn't. Shut up.
I mean, I preferred number one because it took me about 45 minutes to read.
That's only because it reminds you of Cooking with Steps or whatever.
Number one made me colorblind. I'm almost positive of that. The amount of time I spent squinting at the font.
He can no longer join the RAF.
I can't. That was the things I wanted to do. At the end of 2021, I wanted to join the RAF. Thank you very much, Michael Owen. Put paid to that dream.
I mean, do you remember last week when I said that I felt like this was going to be a Neapolitan ice cream?
Yes.
And this week was going to be the chocolate one. Well, it was chocolate, but it was dark and bitter and miserable. It was that like 95% green and black, so I didn't enjoy it one bit.
That's interesting, because I quite enjoyed this chocolate.
Did you?
Yeah.
See, I'm not a big fan of ice cream, but I like the book. I've been disappointed by the last books. And as you know, I mentioned last week, controversially to some of you, apparently, even though I missed that.
Yep.
I've had to mute the WhatsApp group this week. the sheer abuse I was getting. But I felt that there were glimpses of the real Owen hidden in the last one. And finally, with this one, it all came out to the fore, really. And I loved it. I really, really did enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the bits where they were the first half of the book, basically recapping all the stories read before. That's not a problem with the book. That's more
I mean, it's interesting because actually I quite... So yes, you're obviously right in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, there's also... there's an attempt in this book, as we're talking about now, like there's an attempt to show the edgy new Michael.
Yes.
Sort of the new and improved Michael.
Very.
Which means that a lot of the stories that we've heard before, and we've heard a lot of the stories many, many times.
Yeah.
Both through Michael Owen and through Stephen Gerrard and through Jason McAteer. Like everyone's told these stories. But like we do see like how the new unhinged Michael Owen, I suppose, will tell these stories.
Yeah, yeah, bad like, boy Michael.
Bad boy, like in book one, it's obviously like, my family life's great. It's great. I love it. It's going on fantastic.
Here's my dog. Here's my dog. Dad.
Here's my dog and here's my dad.
Here's Lara Croft.
the three most important people in Michael Owen's life. And in book two, it's a bit more like, here's my dog. He's fine. Here's my dad. He's fine as well. Number three, it's like, okay, so my dog's a shit. it's like he talks about his family life like he was under a lot of strain, or like his family were under pressure, like his dad put a lot of pressure on him, which he didn't mind, and he said was okay, but also said that, you know, like the amount of money they were spending sending around the country like to do these trials was putting a pressure on the family. He said that their family like
it sounds more difficult.
He kind of in the second book he kind of painted it as it being a sort of Oliver Twist existence that was fine.
They're fine,
and then
in the third one it's like the bailiffs at the
it's
the door.
It's important to say never blame. He still loves his family more than it's more. There's more difficulties around it than we thought.
What I mean, there's no blame at all. It's more that because of how talented Michael Owen is, his dad is like, okay, we're going to spend lots of money and, you know, send you to the right places. But that puts a strain on them because I think in book two, it's implied that they have a comfortable enough existence to do these things.
Yeah.
In book three, they're the bailiffs that are at the door.
Keeps chucking apples at a wall.
He chucks apples at a wall, and his mum's like, stop chucking apples at that bloody wall, Michael! And his dad's like, go on, have a kick at that. There's a bit where, genuinely, it's such a weird moment. Whereas his mum is like, please stop kicking apples into the bin. And Michael Owen's like, okay, I'll do that. And he keeps kicking apples into the bin. And if he misses and it hits the wall, then it makes a stain and his mum goes mad. But if it goes straight in, then it's, you know, there's no problem at all. So he gets his accuracy up with that. And he says, like, his dad keeps looking at him being like, go on, kick another apple into the bin, Michael.
I don't think he... so that's the thing. I didn't always like Michael during this, I did like the book. And, you know, here's an important thing that came out there.
Oh, here we go. He's separating art from artist again.
Oh, yeah, God.
I can see...
3 out of 10.
Separate them. One big difference. Michael Owen swears now.
He does? Oh yeah.
He's a big boy
Michael
now.
Owen is a big boy. And that means that, this is like I want to say, old stories that we've heard in book one and book two. We've had in book one, we've had a story about Stuart Pearce saying, apparently when he saw Stuart Pearce in a match against Newcastle, Stuart Pearce said, in book two, said, you better watch out today, boy. In book three, with new edgy Michael Owen, he says, you better fucking watch out.
Did he say the F word?
He says the blooming F word.
Oh my God, I didn't see that. I knew he said shit filter.
Within
three pages, I was like, whoa, this is different.
This is a different book. This is edgy, cool Michael Owen.
Yeah.
Also, when Alan Shearer, he says to Alan Shearer during the 98 World Cup when they're doing the penalty shootout against Argentina, he says, which way should I go, Alan? And in book two, he says, just do what you normally do. Put it in the goal, Michael. Like he's a sort of kindly old mayor. In book three, he's like, just do what you normally do. Put it in the fucking goal.
He says it twice.
But he's caught in other people who've said it, though.
That's true. He's not saying it.
Both times, he would never say it.
Well, it's interesting you bring up swearing, because I've actually got a little game for you, guys.
Oh, no.
Actually, that's quite weird that you say that, because the name of this game is called Owen or Oh No He Didn't. So basically, as you mentioned, he swears about in the book, and they're still pretty mild swear words, but you've got to tell me, is this a real swear word Michael says in the book, or have I just made it up?
Okay.
Does Michael not say it? Okay, so the first one is arseholes. Does Michael say arseholes?
Yes, obviously he says arseholes.
Yeah, correct.
How could he not say arseholes?
Yes, it wasn't that we were entitled arseholes used to luxury, as an example. Yeah. Also says it wouldn't bother my ass as well later in there, which I think Jason McAteer said loads in his book.
There's a bit in this book also where he talks a lot about his injuries, and he says like, oh, you know, my hamstring is really bad, and he talks like, does loads of like, you know, talks about his metatarsal, like talks about like different types of the hamstring snapping and stuff, but he always mentions arse at the end of it.
He does, my hamstring
snapped and then it went right up my arse.
Yes,
like, that's not what a doctor would say.
I don't understand hamstrings enough to know what that meant. Swear word number two. Does Michael Owen say bellend?
No.
No, he doesn't. I don't think he does.
Very good knowledge.
That's not his style.
Yeah. I just can't imagine him saying Bellends.
I can't see that either.
My rule is if I would say it, he wouldn't say it. And I call people Bellends all the time.
That's true.
That's interesting.
That's true. Again, I got a lot on the WhatsApp group this week.
So you did unmute.
Yeah, I just occasionally to see that. She started texting me that. And ringing
I took it out of the group.
Number three, shitstorm.
No, he didn't say that.
I don't know, actually.
I think he might
have. I feel like he might have said that.
Yeah, he did. A shitstorm of... A press, he says at one point.
Yeah,
number four, piss merchant.
No.
that's a thick of it line.
There's no way. There's no way.
He doesn't say it. You're right. You called me on that. Bollocks.
Yes. Because at one point he said he got bollocked by the Queen.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, another footballer. Because he
had
to get in a lift with her or something. And his hat got caught in the door.
Yeah, and she's like, you fucking idiot.
That was the most sweary bit, actually, the Queen. Yeah,
the Queen like, you stupid bloody...
Yeah. Question number six, wet heavy balls. Does Michael say wet heavy balls?
He does say that.
Have you been looking at my out of context list?
No, I haven't. I did worry someone might say that. I'd have to head every ball, and those were often wet heavy balls, the answer.
What? Heavy balls.
And finally, does Michael Owen call Vladimir Smeets a cock goblin?
He doesn't, but somebody else might.
Yeah. That's the correct answer.
Rude.
Not right. But yeah, very gritty, Jack. He's very gritty.
Like, I think.
Oh, he's a gritty boy.
Oh, he's
very
a gritty boy.
After dark.
There's definitely after dark.
Hollyoaks after dark.
Yeah. There is one bit that's
Hollyoaks filmed like Chester Gunaway.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I think he probably at one point, that's probably where he learnt to swear. He watched a bit of Hollyoaks After Dark. He's like, wow, writing all these down.
This is so bloody rude. I can't believe my mum's letting me watch this age 27.
There's a bit that sums it up really well, which is like fundamentally, like he talks about this. Well, you know, the big thing we haven't talked about with this book is that he believes that his first book and his second book, he was under the advisement of his agent Tony Stevens to create a sort of whiter than white image.
Yeah,
like that's the big aspect, and he feels like this is his turning against that, as it were. It's the sort of the Miley Cyrus turn, as it were, I would say, like from Hannah Montana to current Miley Cyrus. So one, he wants to really make it clear that, you know, he isn't whiter than white, like he is a real person, which is a noble aim to have.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
He tries to prove it at one point by saying, "Oh yeah," and I'll get it exactly, where he's talking to
Rio.
Oh, is it Rio? Hang on, I don't think it is Rio. Maybe it's a different thing.
Okay,
where he's playing against Everton, and he's saying that, you know, people didn't expect me to be, you know, this edgy guy. And he's playing against Everton, and apparently Alan Stubbs has been there giving quite a lot of shit to him, like, you know, saying mean things to him. And he turns to Alan Stubbs, picks up the ball and says, "You won't be spouting any more shite now, will you?"
Oh, yeah.
And afterwards he's like, "Not quite so angelic now, am I?" Like, oh boy, the bad boy's in the building, baby.
See, I thought you were going to mention Rio Ferdinand when he was like, he says something like, "Well, I'm not actually that clean cut."
And then he quotes
Rio Ferdinand saying, like, "I can't believe the stuff you've gotten away with over the years," and then doesn't mention any of the stuff.
Yeah,
like, it's
that weird thing where you feel like, because I don't know whether Michael Owen has had a very nice, you know, it's hard to know what is true here. The Michael Owen of book one or the Michael Owen of book three, it's hard to know what is accurate. I reckon it's somewhere between the two. I would have to guess he's probably egged up a little bit of the swears here.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
He's probably also been a little bit... You know, he's a little bit grittier than he is in book one.
Do you know the acronym HALT, where they say, like, you shouldn't do anything if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired?
Okay.
I feel like he wrote this book full HALT.
Yeah, every single one. It was all four of those things.
And then he's read it back and he's gone, oh, shit.
Yeah, oh, boy.
I think it's great. I think he's laid his cards
on the
table. You
know what? All authors should be HALT. If he's created this stuff, well, HALT,
it's brilliant.
Good.
No one should ever eat.
Hilary Mantel should be starved.
Hilary Mantel has every letter of HALT in her name.
Oh, that was very quick of you.
Let me just check. Yeah. Very important thing in this book is the shit filter, which comes up, which he mentions is something which he blocks out all the criticisms he had all of his life. And, you know, finally the shit filter's down, I guess, at this point. So I guess he very much had that in place when he was writing the first two books.
So he talks about, like, how someone, like, is it a, I can't, it's like a physio or someone?
It's Alex Inglethorpe, who used to be Spurs physio, Spurs under-18s, both of them at Liverpool.
Okay. He said that, like, you have the best shit filter of anyone I've ever met, which means, like, he's got the best mental strength. As in, like, he can take out all the bad stuff and take on only the good stuff, or constantly be looking forward.
Is that that very Trump moment when he's like, and he said to me, "You've got the best mentality of everyone ever."
Yeah, he talks about a psychologist. You're like, he, earlier on in his career, a psychologist can't do any work on him.
I can't do anything for you.
You're too sane.
You've got too strong a mentality, Michael. There's no weakness in you at all.
What am I meant to do?
But like, the shit filter stuff is really interesting because I think it's both the strength of Michael Owen, but also his ultimate downfall as to why he's not really remembered as. He's not as loved as other former players, yeah. And I think that's a big part of it, is that because he's constantly looking forward, there's never any enjoyment, you know? Like, the shit filter is a thing that allows him to keep on going, but it means he's always looking forward. I think I feel, reading back a lot of Michael Owen's stuff, you do feel like he's constantly, he's so trained on the future that he never enjoys the present. Mm-hmm. And that makes him quite cold.
Yes.
You spend the whole time being like, oh, okay.
And do you think now he's got to a point where, like, his future probably isn't as bright as his past.
Now he thinks about his past too much.
Yeah.
So I think he's only in his past now.
Yeah.
Which I think is a big part of the latter bit of the book, is really coming to terms with that.
I think he's always had this, like, a bit of an identity struggle where, like, I think he likes to be loved. And because he wasn't this, like, Steven Gerrard type character who was, you know, local to a club and went through the ranks,
whole time.
He was sort of on the outskirts. He was from Chester. He had the pick of, like, lots of different clubs. He was never really loved by a fan base. I think he craves that.
Look at all of you guys saying exactly what I said last week by spotting it.
Right.
And now you're like, oh, I love him so much.
I think you read the third book before. Well,
I genuinely think that's exactly true.
That's what I think it is.
Because you do not get that in book two. Book two is a cold, sad book.
You can't hide from us today, James. We can see how red you're going right now.
As Michael Owen once said to Vladimir Smith, you're all a bunch of cock goblins. Talking to last week, James brought up the interesting relationship between David Beckham and Michael Owen. I know you had a lot of thoughts on this.
Yes. This week, I just felt like Michael flipped the table after playing Monopoly. He was furious.
Oh, yeah.
He was absolutely raging. And it goes on for pages. And I was quite, like, amazed by this whole thing, to be honest. Because he didn't just sort of turn it up a notch. He turned it into a bit of a turf war between him and his wife, and David and Victoria.
Yes.
Oh,
and
it's huge.
You know, I love it when a wag gets brought in. So I was very invested.
That's true.
In this. But like last week, I felt
and you still didn't like the book.
No. Yeah. But last week, I felt like his comments on Beckham were very much rooted in competitiveness and like pushing himself to be better, and he wanted to be seen in the same light.
Yeah.
And then this one, he just really sort of throws him under the bus and doesn't care what he says, but tries to temper it by saying at the beginning of this section, "We've always had a very nice relationship, but," and then spends like 7-8 pages just going in on him.
He does that really with quite a lot of people.
Really, really goes in on him. And I've got some, I've pulled out some quotes that he says because I just kind of quite couldn't believe
it.
You have to, because you sort of, you're
checking a few fake ones.
See if you can guess which
one. Fun game.
But like last week, when he talks about what happened in Greece, he says, "Twice they were ahead before Beckham scored the goal that no Englishman or I will ever forget." You know, that's a fairly nice
thing. Butter him up.
In this one, the same goal, instead of the routine we'd rehearsed, David just did what he usually did and put it into the top corner by himself. Meow! Like, come on!
Bloody hell, I don't remember
goal,
that. That was terrible.
The same goal.
That was bad.
And then he brings Victoria in because he says, well, it would be remiss of me not to mention when he gets sent off, because he brings that up quite a lot when they went down to 10 men. Because I think Michael really believes that that was the year that they should have won the World Cup.
Oh, I mean,
that and every other tournament since, they should have won it.
But he goes into quite emotional depth about what that meant to him.
Yeah.
For Beckham to be sent off, which he didn't in the other book. He just sort of said, it was a shame, but we kind of got on with it.
That stuff was incredibly interesting.
But then I mean, nothing nice ever starts with that sentence, does it? Like, we always got on okay, but... turn the page. And he says, like, you know, Beckham was the darling of English football and Owen kind of wasn't loved. And then overnight it changed. And you really do get a bit of a sense of glee in his voice when he talks about it, that suddenly Beckham was the villain.
Yeah.
And Owen kind of got to be on all of the back pages every week. And he spends 3 pages talking about how childish it was that Beckham flicked his foot out. Like, what's more childish?
Yeah.
20 years later, spending 3 pages on it.
But it is interesting because I feel like after that happened, you know, I remember everyone being like, oh, you know, Beckham did that and we just have to accept it. Yeah. It's okay. He couldn't. And this is the first time I've seen any England player being like, how dare
you? Yeah, I mean,
he ends that bit of the chapter by saying, I'd be lying if I didn't say that what David did that day let us down. I still hold resentment about it today. Like, he actually puts that in black and white on the page. And I do understand it, but it's... I feel like after you've written two books where you're kind of nice about everyone and you don't want to cause controversy and then to do this, I think that's why I didn't like it, because I feel like now he's not relevant. He's trying to grab headlines. I mean, the bit with Victoria is quite funny, though.
That's fascinating.
Because he brings her in and she doesn't even, like, she does not warrant this, because he says he never heard anything directly from her, but someone told him that she didn't like him because he'd heard that she'd said that he was an arsehole for not standing up for Beckham after what happened. But there's no... And he goes in on her as well.
Yeah.
And he clearly says, I've got no proof. I just didn't like it that she said that. But I didn't hear her say it. I heard someone else tell me that someone else said it.
It's very that killer's song, you know?
Mel B, who heard it from Mel C.
It really felt like, what's going to get this book in the sun? I know, I'm going to slag off Victoria Beckham. The cynic in me says that.
I don't know, because he spends the whole book saying he doesn't want fame and fortune. I know you can say that that that's just the thing that he says. I don't know. I feel like Michael Owen doesn't understand. Like I said, I don't think he understands how to deal with the media.
Yeah.
I don't think he understands how to get his book in the sun, or what's going to make him popular and what's going to not make him popular. I thought it's just stuff he's saying.
Am I thinking of him as an evil genius? I think he's just an idiot.
An adorable, lovely idiot. But like, I feel like he probably couldn't say these things in 2006, because if it were 2021 and David Beckham, Michael Owen were playing in the England squad and David Beckham got sent off, Michael Owen would go on Twitter and say everyone should lay off David Beckham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think players now have a relationship with fans.
And he was 18.
He was 18.
He said in the first book, he said like he didn't even want to go up to him afterwards and give him a pat on the back because Beckham was an established player on the England team at that time.
I just feel like it was so unnecessary to include it in here. It just makes him look like such a petulant child.
You need this inquest into the England team of those days.
I think it is unnecessary, but I do also think that...
He loved it.
I did love it.
Because in the second book, it was all aimed at Simeone, really.
Yeah, it was,
why would you do that? It's just embarrassing. So then he's like, I think
that he has a little bit of time now to be able to go, okay, well, that was painful for me.
The only person that he hates more than Victoria Beckham is Fabio Capello.
He really hates Fabio Capello. Oh my God, I love that.
Are we any closer to figuring out whether Michael Owen has David Beckham's phone number? What do we think now? Because last time he's aged.
No, I mean, if they did, he's blocked now.
Absolutely deleted that number. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because there's a lot of catty comments. There's a lot of negativity. Yeah.
If you think he's bad at Beckham, wait till you see what he's about Alan Shearer later.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. I can't wait for that.
I reckon they were hoping that Michael Owen's Instagram hot daughter was going to end up with Brooklyn Beckham and he was going to like infiltrate the family.
I mean, okay, that is definitely that's a romantic comedy plot that you just come up with that.
There's all levels of, like, dynasty to to this kind of thing. Yeah.
So also Michael Owen is obsessed with hierarchy. I genuinely do believe that.
Yeah,
he's obsessed with who's important at any one time. There's a bit where
that's why the Queen bollocks him. He was so offended.
He's so upset about that. It's like, oh, I can't do anything about that. Not even Stephen Gerrard's above the Queen.
But maybe, you know, in like 20 years' time, we reach the next door to Buckley. So basically, the Queen was totally unfair of her.
Complete
dickhead,
the Queen. but there's a bit where he talks about, I don't know if you remember this, in the Liverpool team bus, he's like, so some players, if you were like really high up, you would get to put your feet up, you sit in a certain like bit on the coach, and you'd have your cup holder, and you put your phone in. And he was like, and I, as a young player, would never dare to do that. Yeah. I would never dare to put my phone in the cup holder.
Nobody ever told him that if you put it in there, it makes your speaker louder so you can play music for everyone.
He doesn't like music.
No. Yeah, that's the point. What's going to happen? Like, Veyard Heggem's going to come over and go,
stop playing Pavarotti.
It's the only album I have.
Right, who wants a dramatic reading this week?
We didn't have one last week,
so let's go. God, this will be proper atmosphere for this one.
Ooh,
there we go.
Very dramatic.
Can someone cue the dramatic music this week?
I was going to say, Joby, I haven't got a microphone, so...
Everyone looked at me then. Cue dramatic music.
Yes!
Bloody hell!
How long have you been waiting to do that, producer? Yeah. This week's dramatic reading is called Michael Owen Recreates That Peter Kay Advert at the Burnabout.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I'm so excited! I'm so excited!
Bizarrely, something that was really worrying about arriving in Madrid, so...
He's gone to Madrid.
That's the
he's
context.
He's gone to Madrid. It's been a really, like, a wrench from his career. Like, he's gone from Liverpool.
I've got a real bee in my bonnet about this bit as
Oh, okay. Well, let's leave that bee for the end, please.
He, like, slowly buzzes through the story and it keeps coming back a few times. Bizarrely, something that was really worrying about arriving in Madrid in the short term was the keep-up routine every new player has to do in the Bernabeu centre circle.
Yeah.
As a prospective Galactico, italicized, you're expected to perform, do tricks to dazzle, also italicized.
Ooh.
But okay, so does this... I've forgotten. Does this happen with every Galactico?
Did in those days, yeah.
Pretty much.
Which, like, if you got a good new... Like, Jersey Dudek, did he have to do keep it up?
Yeah, I think...
That
I think,
seems mean.
I can't imagine, like, 30,000 fans turned up to watch Dudek doing that, I'll be honest. Yeah. The problem was, while I knew I could basically keep a ball in the air as long as anyone, I've never had any tricks whatsoever. I was a no-trick pony whose formative years have been spent perfecting the art of putting the ball in the top corner, not balancing on the back of my neck or doing around the world. He's so derogatory. Like,
who cares about those things? Beach football?
Yeah.
The idea of fun in football? Football is about putting the ball in the goal. Everything else is just a waste of time.
I'm sorry to say this, but can you imagine shagging Michael Owen? It must be awful.
That's all I do every day.
Because
is that what you expect from shagging a man? You're like, oh, make sure you do a couple of around the world.
But I
it's functional
that,
and
know,
it created four
it's
children.
It's very functional.
Yeah.
He's
oh,
very,
yeah, no, that is very true.
You know,
yeah.
The only hole is the goal. That's it.
Dash, I knew taking you to the pub is a bad idea. I knew this was going to happen.
That's definitely the bit before the episode now.
Not on my watch. I was so nervous about going on the pitch, maybe dropping the ball and everyone thinking I was crap, that it nearly swayed. And there's a lot of pressure.
That would have been... I used to, in when I was growing up, I used to, like, I had a Real Madrid jersey and I was like, I can play for Real Madrid. And I would try and keep it up and then immediately drop it. And I'd be like, I'll never play for Real Madrid. And not because I was like, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not a good right back, but I was like, well, I can't do the keepy uppy bit.
It was between you and Michelle Salgado for a while.
It was a while.
It nearly swayed my mind about going through with the commitment to sign. That's how worried he was. When it came to it, I went on the pitch and had all the customary photographs taken. And then, inevitably, that moment came when they threw a ball at me and every camera in the place trained in on whatever I was going to do with it. Panicking, I thought, I'm just going to volley this. Smash it out of the stadium. Hoping the crowd would think I was doing a nice thing by gifting them a souvenir, I volleyed the first ball as hard as I could into the crowd.
Oh my God.
It's like he's on Soccer AM or something.
I hope he didn't have it.
Just the panic. Absolute panic of just, here you go!
Then another ball came and I volleyed that into the other end.
Oh
a succession
God.
Of balls around and I just smashed all of them into the crowd. It seemed easier. I couldn't face the idea of having to do any tricks, and I think it was convincing. I never really had to wow the fans. The players were a different matter altogether.
So
we're not going to go into that.
The manager would be like, okay, he's volleyed one. Give him another one.
Yeah, that's the bit. Give him another one. And another. And another.
Okay,
and another.
No, Michael,
you're costing us shitloads in balls.
Florento Perez is like, okay, let's just stop. We're going to lose lots of money on the balls now.
Right, guys, we're halfway through our last book in the Michael Owen trilogy, and there'll be more in a minute with a first look at his doom spell at Newcastle.
Hello. Hello there. What voice do you want me to do? We will do a little bit. I'll just do my voice.
Do your voice.
Yeah, thanks. Hello. I'm Joe Marler. People think I hate people, but I don't. I actually love interaction with people. I love finding out what jobs they do and whether I could do what they do. The Joe Marler Show.
Joe Marler Show.
With new episodes every Wednesday.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are reading Michael Owen's reboot, the third in our Michael Owen trilogy, the final book, and we're reading in a bloody pub.
Bloody pub, mate!
A bloody pub.
Pints.
You know, we're all Larry now.
Larry. I'm going to fight all of you.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what.
Jack just requested a bottle of wine.
I did. Well, yeah. That's true. I was like,
you did.
We're having a meal. Let's have a bottle of wine. Why not?
Okay.
Wow, a couple of Scotch eggs.
Very continental of you.
Yeah, I am.
Well, we are, you know, as we're Larry, I think it only makes sense to bring up the Larrier section of the show, out of context, uh-huh. Michael Owen. So, James, kick us off.
All right.
Thank you.
Should I do it in a Michael Owen?
Has it developed over the past week?
No.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm not one for taking my top off. But if I had during those few months, you'd have been impressed. I was totally ripped.
Oh, Michael.
I love that bit so much.
I mean, that was, you know when you said, do you ever imagine, can you imagine shagging my clothes? That was the moment when I did.
Also, the idea of I'm not one for taking my top off. Like what? Do you just wear the same shirt for months on end?
He's never taken his top off.
It's in the shower with a t-shirt on. Michael, take it off.
Yeah, please take it off.
Wash your body.
Tash, but I'm not one for taking my top off.
Tash, have you got a similarly dirty one-liner?
I mean, this is so out of context that I want to hear your thoughts on how this came about.
Okay.
How was he to know I'd been lying face down on a waterlogged golf course just a few hours prior?
I do remember where that is. I do actually remember where that is. Wow.
That sounds like an ITV drama.
All of them, wetness pops up a lot in this book. It's been like a pathetic fallacy. Yeah,
There's a lot of rain.
Yeah, there is. Jack?
All I'm asking you to do is fucking go and hide in the toilets for 5 minutes for one day.
that is a very good example, which you've used where he swears in it as well.
Yeah.
He's one of the rare.
And that's a quote of someone else saying that to him.
Okay. Michael Owen that's his psychiatrist.
Yeah.
That's that point. I've got a similarly medical one, which is, it's quite a long one. I've got the perfect life from a knee perspective today. There's nothing I can't do. I've got Dr. Richard Stedman and a kind deceased person who's willing to donate his or her parts to medicine to thank for that.
That is so funny.
That is so Michael.
So Michael.
So that's so Michael. We really do know him now,
yeah,
don't we?
Oh, do.
Michael.
If no one else knows Michael Owen, we know Michael Owen.
We could write his fourth book.
We will write his fourth book.
I would absolutely love that.
Michael Owen, Andy Crabb story.
We could feed all of our knowledge into an AI machine and it would come out.
Yeah, we get something
accurate,
out. It'd be better than the second one. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. Bloody hell, I hate that second
so
one.
So Michael Owen and Hamstrings takes us nicely into Newcastle, which was a ridiculous time
He's
of his life.
He's getting so good at segues.
You know I don't like when you do segues.
But so good at segues.
That was such a good one, I'll take it. It was
It was so chaotic, Newcastle, from the beginning.
Yeah. Yes.
There was so much going on there, but I want to start by talking about the helicopter.
The helicopter.
You mean when he swung his willy around?
Not so angelic now, am I?
So, I gather there's been sort of... he's got a bit of a reputation for this helicopter over the years. And he tries to put...
He bought a helicopter.
He bought a helicopter to get around, basically. But... He tries to set the record straight on it, but I don't think he does. I think it's ridiculous.
It makes it sound so bad.
He tries to be really like play it down, like, oh, it's just
just a helicopter.
He uses it like a scooter, like just to nip around. Like, it's ridiculous. I'm pretty sure at one point he drops his daughter off at school in it.
Yeah.
Like, what?
He's like, oh yeah, you know, I landed it on the training pitch in Newcastle, but that was for a dare. And you're like, well, that doesn't make it better.
That's why they all think you're a wanker.
Yeah, that's arguably much worse.
Yeah.
It's so weird. That
I
whole
can't
helicopter
get
thing.
My head around the helicopter thing. I really
also,
can't.
Also, the way he introduced it, he says that he looked at his at the house that the house that he was going to buy. And he says, you know what? That'd be a perfect place to land a helicopter.
Yeah.
As if that was the first thing you thought.
Yeah. Anyone, got to go to the council or anything about here?
You guys have a helicopter?
A helipad could go here, maybe?
I feel like I know Michael well enough now to know that he gave that helicopter a name. Ooh. And he'd be like, oh, I'm taking Bessie out today. You know what I mean?
That's a horse name as well.
Oh, true. Yeah, true. That works.
I'm taking Lady Etienne out for a spin.
To the co-op.
Yeah. Strokes it, feeds it some oats.
I'll drop Gemma off at the co-op.
Walk, Michael, it's fine. But the whole Newcastle saga is just crazy.
Mass. Yes,
I mean, his entire time in Madrid... Souness was calling him every 2 weeks, apparently.
That's so funny.
And just like, just checking in. Do you want to come to Newcastle yet? And then he ends up doing it.
Against his will, massively.
He really does
he
not
says
want to go.
He signed with absolutely no joy.
I mean, even till the last second, he was like, I'm not going to do this. He was about to tell them. I think it was Freddie Shepherd and Souness and some other club people were driving to him to sign the contract, take the pictures. And he was on the phone to his agent going, tell him to turn around. I'm not going to do this. Like,
and
just
his agent was like,
now.
You can do that, but I will lose my reputation.
But Michael has a sort of tendency to go along with things until it's too late. And then he's like, okay, this is it now. he actually says it was the moment that he'd taken the picture with the shirt and him signing the contract. He's like, I knew it was, there was no going back at that moment. Well, yeah, obviously. He just signed the contract.
It's going to happen at that point, Michael. It's too late.
Didn't Dan James do that for Leeds?
Yeah, he
when
did.
When he was at Swansea, wasn't he? He did that.
Aaron Ramsey might have done that as well for Man United. I think he might have
signed
for Man United.
You know the contract that they sign there, though? Is that the real one? Or is it like a lottery like check where it's a pretend one?
It's like a big check.
Yeah.
You know the big checks you get?
Yeah.
They're not real.
Yeah,
you can't cash that. Check. You go into a bank with a big check, they'll laugh you out of there.
Yeah. Very
true. The Newcastle thing was also really interesting because he talks about how like he kept on giving Souness false hope. He kept on saying like, oh yeah, maybe I'll sign. It's like, it's not really false hope because you did sign. Like, it, arguably, that's just hope. You gave him hope and it's hope that he acted on and then he signed you. Like, that's fine.
And he was desperate to go back to Liverpool.
Yes, at the time.
And that's what he was holding out for. He thought he saw his time in Madrid as sort of, all right, I'll be here for a year. I know it's going to be short term. I'll go back to Liverpool at the end of it. And Liverpool just weren't making that happen. And by the end of it, he had to go to Newcastle. And he really didn't want to.
He seems to blame Liverpool for that. But then equally, then why did he leave Liverpool? If he really wanted to do it.
If he really wanted to be at Liverpool.
Well, just stay at Liverpool.
I feel like he's someone who doesn't want to regret things.
Well, yeah, but
he didn't want to regret the chance against Real Madrid. He's like, I didn't like it. I'll come back.
But you know what the risk is when you go to Real Madrid? You know that it's not like a revolving door. You can't just immediately come back to Liverpool.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like that bit was quite... You feel like he was putting unrealistic... Because he was saying, like, oh, Liverpool should have offered 12 million for me, but they've just sold him for 8. So obviously they're not going to do that. That'd be stupid.
And then when he signs for Newcastle, he does it under the proviso. They write into his contract every year he can sign for Liverpool for like a reduced fee every season. Yeah. But it just never happens. There's 3 years go by and he's like, all right, it's not going to happen.
Because he's injured.
He's injured all the time. Yeah, he's out.
Good, yeah.
But yeah, it's just a mad time in Newcastle. As soon as who he likes, he gets along with quite well.
Yeah. They're quite similar characters in some ways. He's a much more fiery version of him, but yeah.
Very headstrong. I reckon Michael Owen threw a pickaxe at a man.
Yeah.
Who is it who didn't like Souness? Who we've
Bellamy?
Bellamy didn't like him.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I can kind of see.
And then the Shearer, who he initially gets on very well.
Oh my gosh.
Very good strike partnership, very good friends. He lives with him. He's his him and Louise move in with Shearer and his wife for a while. And they're getting really well. They're like best mates.
Yeah.
Obviously that
fell apart.
Comes apart
later on.
That's
so interesting. I didn't know about this at all.
I knew they had a bit of a spat at some point. But yeah, I spoke to, again, a Newcastle friend the other day about it. And he was like, yeah, well, it's because effectively a lot of Newcastle fans think Owen feigned an injury at that time. And he says that's what Shearer says. He says that's not the case. I offered to play, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I can see why Newcastle fans do dislike Owen because he is ruthless about them in this book.
So I can see that. But equally, like, you know, the game that it is that it's a relegation match against Aston Villa. And Michael Owen says, like, he's going to pull a hamstring if he runs 100%. So he says, like, look, risk me. Like, that's it. That's all he can do.
And when Shearer is the manager,
I feel like that's all Owen can do at this point. Like, I thought Owen knows his body better than anyone else.
Shearer's under a lot of pressure. And, you know, it's not going well for him. And Owen's basically saying, play me if you want, but I wouldn't.
Yeah.
He's not giving him much confidence.
I can also understand that. I think that's
I think it's fair enough. But Shearer sort of made Owen the scapegoat a little bit,
I think. He did,
I think it's easier, as he says. That was the bit where I felt quite sorry for Owen, because it felt like, obviously, Shearer's going to make him the scapegoat. Obviously, the Newcastle fans are going to believe him over over Owen. And it sort of throws him under the bus quite a lot.
Yeah.
I went back and had a look at the kind of headlines and stuff that were going on at this time, because I read it and I was like, was it as bad as he's saying? And it is vicious.
Yeah. There's a lot of back and forth between the two of them. Quite nasty.
It's sad because they get on really well over the course of their career. And he says that like it's a feud that they have never been able to overcome.
Yeah,
There's a bit where they are slagging each other off in interviews. So like one of them give an interview and then the next day the other one will give an interview and it just gets tense. Yeah.
However, there's an important, you know, it might not have made up with Alan Shearer, but a really interesting thing from all the books, he loves Kevin Keegan now. Yeah. Couldn't stand him in the second book.
Like, Kevin Keegan in the second book, he's the biggest villain.
Yeah.
And suddenly, Kevin Keegan is like, oh, God, this genuinely is my favorite bit of the book. I absolutely loved his relationship with Kevin Keegan.
Yeah.
It made me so happy.
Yeah, same. Like, it was a great arc across the books.
Genuinely, I feel like I've grown as a person.
Yeah,
I feel like powerful now.
Especially because he slags him so much. He slags him off so much in the second book.
Yeah,
and then he becomes Newcastle manager. He's like, oh God, I've released that book. I've slagged him rotten. But apparently Keegan hadn't read it or wasn't aware of it. Well, he probably was, but
only four people have read that book, and that's us. And Omar? Was it Omar, the guy with the toilet paper?
Mr. Toilet.
But then Keegan was like a revelation because Owen said he thrived in the club environment, the sort of day to day.
Yeah, he was more of a club manager.
In the trenches. And that he was actually touting him as like a defensive midfielder at one point.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because it seems like at one point that Michael Owen is going to graduate to the next stage of his career.
Yeah.
And it feels like Kevin Keegan's going to be the person.
Like Alan Smith did a similar thing. He was like a very attacking player for Leeds, and then he became a defensive midfielder and was good in that position.
Yeah. Or like Scholes becoming
But everything that we've read about him just says that he will never change his mind on that. Like what he's got his mind set on and what he feels like he's been training to do since he was kicking apples in the bin is to do that, and he's not going to change his mind, and nothing else will be good enough. I think even if
Keegan might have got it out of him though.
I just feel like he's so stubborn.
So Keegan gets sacked before that can happen. It's fascinating to wonder what would have happened if he'd been allowed to stay on. I mean, there's a bit with Keegan that made me genuinely, this is one of the bits where I inexplicably started to get quite emotional, and I have no idea why, where he talks about how Nicky Butt and Michael Owen get challenged to a head tennis game.
Yeah, with Terry McDermott.
With Terry McDermott and Kevin Keegan. And it's so funny because like Kevin Keegan's like, go on, play head tennis with us. And Nicky Butt and Michael Owen are like, we're creamer, right? We'd be really good. We're professional footballers. There's
like
a bit where
60-odd,
when Nicky Butt's like, okay, like they're very confident, but we're professional footballers, right?
Yeah,
we can still win this. Yeah. And Michael Owen does a sort of Spock impression being like, it would be illogical if we were not to be able to beat them. Which is
In dressing rooms, there is this thing called heading banter, and apparently it's a way.
Very much an
and
alien.
And in factories,
But like, they do it, and Kevin Keegan destroys them.
Yeah,
he's so good at like heading tennis, and Owen and Butt. It, unlike most things with Michael Owen, where you feel like if Michael Owen gets embarrassed in front of teammates, he would take it. You know, he would be like, "I can never show my face around here again. I must destroy all record of this." He seems to revel in it. He pays the money that they had on this bet through one piece, which is really cute. He goes to the bank. It's a good prank. He like tosses it all over the.
annoying.
It's annoying. But then Kevin Keegan like takes it. So basically,
he pays £100 in his office.
It's really cute. Surrounded by like one piece that add up to £100.
Yeah,
it was the bit where I felt like having struggled with Michael Owen. He struggles with hierarchy. He struggles with the concept of who he is. This felt like the moment where he felt accepted, like for all of his weird foibles. He's a weird guy. He's a weird, isolated man. He felt like he'd been accepted into this world, and then it's taken away from him, and that's quite sad.
Yeah,
I mean, what Michael Owen should have done is read Darren Huckabee's book, who warned us in the very first book we read that Kevin Keegan's very good at head tennis.
He was like, he's really, really good at head tennis.
He should have paid attention to that. And also, I feel like, just to end this Newcastle chapter a little bit, I feel like it was doomed from the start when Freddie Shepherd gives them a haunted house to live in. Apparently. So there was no chance going back.
Inexplicable. He's like, so I was up for living in this living in this house. Louise thought it was haunted, and I, in the end, had to agree with her.
Some shady shit happened.
What's weird about that is when they're looking for a house, he's like, oh, you know, we stayed in this hotel that was in the sticks, and we that's not really our kind of thing. So we moved in with Alan Shearer while Louise was looking for a place for us to live that was more our kind of thing. And then they ended up moving right into the country. It's like, I thought that wasn't your thing.
You need a helicopter to get to the co-op.
There's also a bit where he's like, we lived close to Steve Stone's house, but I lived in a bigger house than him. It's inexplicably mean.
I've got real
about
beef with Michael Owen's house choices, though.
Oh, interesting.
There's a bit where he's in Madrid and he's like, oh my God, the worst thing about living in Madrid is that they put us in a luxury hotel for 4 months and it was awful. And they just never gave me a house. They just never got me a house. I'm thinking, this is a man who, he doesn't know how to have fun. He definitely knows his way around Rightmove. He's earning £100,000 a week. Go and get your own bloody house.
You could very easily get a house.
He says all that would have made them happy was a pool and a palm tree. He couldn't find that in Madrid.
Yeah. Could have gone to the beach.
What are you doing, mate? Come on.
It's hard to think of. Although he did say that he got paid in a really weird way in Madrid.
Yeah.
Like,
they're like,
they wouldn't be paid for six months and then suddenly be like, here's £3 million. Have that. And you're like, okay,
cool. In one piece.
Just as a final topic to talk about, I wanted to bring something up
Well, first of all, we mentioned an ex-Newcastle manager in Kevin Keegan. I want to talk about his international career because, you know, we've discussed a lot of the clubs he's been at. We haven't discussed United. We haven't discussed Stoke. But United is very interesting at the end of the book because it's...
United, I would argue, has the best description of a goal we've ever had on Football Book Club.
For the goal when he scores against Man City.
I think that's one of the best descriptions of any goal we've ever had.
It really was.
It was so good.
And the way he was hesitant to sign for Newcastle and Stoke, he loves going to United. He was like, I got there early, I turned up at Fergie's house, chatting about horses for 7 months. And then, and it sounds great, but... And then Stoke...
I mean, I can't blame him.
Yeah.
So rude.
He wasn't fussed about that.
If he'd gone to Port Vale,
different story.
Oh, yeah, different story.
Him and Tom Pope up front have been deadly.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Michael, the offer's still there. I'm sorry about everything I've just said for you.
But that's club-wise. International-wise, we touched upon it earlier a little bit. We talked about David Beckham. I think the reason why I enjoyed this book so much is because we have so many regrets... looking back at our golden generation, and I'm doing scare quotes here.
Yeah.
Our golden generation of players who were, you know, individually incredible. He lists them at one point. He goes through, like, says, like, he had like 15
centre backs. Yeah, and when he lists them, you are like, oh, yeah, wow. Okay.
He goes, like, we had like 15 great centre backs. Yeah. We had King, Terry, Ferdinand.
Yeah.
Woodgate.
Yeah, Neville and Cole.
Cole, Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes. And that was the problem. We couldn't fit them all in, that kind of thing. Owen, Shearer, Rooney, blah, blah, blah. All around this time. I know Shearer's a slightly different era.
Yeah.
But still. He goes through all these, but Beckham goes... I'm just going to name names now. Chap Sinclair.
Pete Crouch.
He goes through all these players and he lists them all off. And, you know, we always hear a lot about in the media about how the England players cared more about domestic football at the time, especially the United players. They're more focused on that and stuff.
Yeah.
And we've never really had a big inquest into why that was the case. And Owen is the first person who I've read to go like, you know what? It was a fucking joke. And like, it really, really was. He's so angry about it.
He's very angry.
As we mentioned before, Michael Owen's very, very focused. There's a bit really early on the book where he says his debut for England, he wasn't like, you know what? I can just look back. He wasn't like, I've made it. He was like, no, what I need to do now is I need to score 2 goals when I come on. Then I need to stay in the team. I need to get in the next squad. I need to do all that kind of thing.
Which is the future. He's constantly focused on the future.
Exactly. But now he's finally got a chance to process it. And he's fuming. He's chucking everyone to the bus.
I mean,
he chucked Darius Basile under the bus. Like, just for missing a penalty.
That was mean.
He goes, look.
This is the attitude we were talking about last week, where, like, when something goes right, it's 100% him. When something goes wrong, it's 100% everyone else.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just his mentality.
It's true. But also, like, I do feel like he was unlucky with injuries going into tournaments. I feel like very viewing fans could blame Michael Owen for the performance of those things. I wouldn't blame Darius Vassell. I feel like
who are you going to blame Darius Vassell?
Yeah,
God's
it's not his fault. But, it, you know, I think it's very interesting that, you know, he's missed out on all these chances and he's fuming out. Like, you mentioned Dave Beckham earlier. There's a bit where he talks about Beckham kind of thought that penalty in 2002 was kind of his redemption moment. And Owen was like, in no way were the circumstances comparable to us being knocked out of the 98 World Cup. His penalty against Argentina in 2002 laid no ghost to rest for me. I'd have to live with the aftermath of his actions in 1998 for the rest of my life.
It really is.
Also, in book two, he doesn't seem that bothered about them going out. It's so weird.
Well, because he thinks he's got more opportunities.
Exactly, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's like, shit.
It all went wrong. The thing that he's really angry about, I think, is 2006, I suppose, isn't it? Where he's really annoyed about how they did that.
Yes.
And, I mean, again, this comes down to Owen being like, he wants to be the main man. He wants to be wanted. And the idea that Rooney is more wanted than him sends him through a loop. Like, he goes nuts.
But there's a bit where you mentioned that, like, 2006. In the last book, he's very full of praise of Sven Goran Eriksson.
Yeah.
He's gone off Sven.
Oh, my God. He's gone off Sven a lot.
He's doubled down how much he loves Glenn Hoddle. And a lot of people have said that. I've heard a lot of, like Glenn Hoddle was very progressive for his time. In many ways, the way he set up a football team, where he played three at the back, which Michael Owen says 4-4-2 killed the England team, basically. Playing three at the back worked really well.
That bit was really interesting because there was also a bit where he's like, well, you know, this idea that Lampard and Gerrard can't play in the same team.
Yeah.
If you play a single striker with Lampard and Gerrard just behind, you do quite well. But that's Owen effectively saying, one striker, that's kind of cutting his chances of getting into the team by 50%.
Yeah. That bit about Lampard and Gerrard I thought was quite interesting because that bit, you could tell that was his punditry coming through, not him as a footballer, I thought, because he was very fair in that and he didn't kind of involve himself in it. Whereas the other bits was like, well, I would have done this better. Yeah. I would have done that
I'd
better.
Have signed up for a penalty if I was Darius Vassell.
Yeah.
It's
poor,
true.
Poor Darius.
He's horrible, that bit. He's it like, is, I don't want to be harsh on him. And then he proceeds to be very harsh on him. He's like, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
All right, Michael.
Yeah, Darius, I guess he thought that was his chance. But anyway, the Hoddle thing is fascinating, how much he feels like basically if they had Hoddle during the noughties, that England might have had a bigger chance. Yeah, he could be right in that many ways.
Maybe it's hard to know, right, but the way that he goes on about it is just relentless.
He needs to let go of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see it being hard. It must be massively hard.
It must be hard.
He should have won more in his career. And it's. I was just going to say, sorry, there's a bit where Alex Ferguson says to him early on, he's like, well, you know what? He loves Fergie, and Ferguson comes across brilliantly in the book and his foreword and stuff like that.
He treats
him
as it.
But he says basically that whole kind of, you know, when people say, like, if Alex Ferguson looked after Paul Gascoigne, he wouldn't have the same thing. I've always hated that kind of argument.
Yeah.
But he says something to Owen in this book, which is something along the lines of, he's like, well, you know, maybe if Liverpool hadn't used you so much as a kid, you wouldn't have suffered all these injuries later on, and you might have won more across the career. However, I disagree with that, because if Owen hadn't been pushed to that early stage, he wouldn't have necessarily had that explosive start to his career.
He
might never have had the career. Owen says that.
Owen makes that point where he's like, look, I need to get into the team. That's all it could be, really.
The reason that I just couldn't get on board with this book is it's so what if. And I think you've had an amazing career. Like, if someone had told him when he was a kid he'd had that career, he'd have been buzzing about
it.
Yeah,
it's hard, though, isn't it? Because if someone had told him at 15 you're going to have this career, he'd have been really buzzing. But if someone had told him at 23 you're not going to have this career
that you expect,
he'd have been furious. True. The ending of the book, because we referred to it quite a lot, like where he talks about, you know, why it's called Reboot. It's about basically him saying he has to give up the mentality of being a footballer in order to survive. Like, what was really good about him as a footballer, you know, being ambitious, being the best, constantly, always looking forward, is killing his family life. He found that when he retires in 2013, like, it will kill him. It will destroy his like, marriage. His wife is effectively, at one point, his wife's going to leave him. And he has to kind of reboot his life. There's a bit at the end where he's like, after he finally goes into therapy. Thank God he finally goes into therapy. He finally.
Well, he did go before. It just didn't. He was too mentally strong.
Yeah. Now he's weak enough.
Yeah.
He can be susceptible to therapy. But he talks about how, like, you know, there's a role reversal in the relationship now. Like, Michael is the stay at home father. He's laid back. Louise's career is the one that's more important, because Michael's career is effectively, you know, punditry here and there, but it's not really that important. And he says, like, I hope I'm doing well. I hope I'm doing a good job at being Louise, which is so sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it just broke my heart. And I just, oh.
We've hinted at this final line before. I feel like
we've got to say the final line.
The final line is,
oh, my God, the whole final bit is so beautiful.
He says, so
I love it. I really, genuinely, I was reading it with tears in my eyes. I was so angry that I had tears in my eyes. I hated myself for it. But it was so good.
I agree, and I saw it coming. He says, he goes to, he recalls the conversation with his son, James. I can't remember how it started. So, Dad, he said, were you ever any good? How can you prove it? Thinking on my feet, I walked over to the shelf in the sitting room that was home to a few DVDs and video games. Why? First of all, DVDs.
Sure,
that's a good question.
They're a dying medium, Michael. What are you doing?
Yeah. No, they're more like, why has he got films?
Why has he got
anything? I picked out a copy of PES 28, 2008. With me and Cristiano Ronaldo on the front cover. There you go, I said, as I put the game in his hand with the cover face. That was your dad.
Oh, God.
And his son's like, what? So you're a cartoon character?
Yeah.
What? I don't understand this.
Are you talking about the time you met Lara Croft?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. And that's,
it genuinely is such a good
one. It's really
nice
good
seeing that kind of that, you know, that ship filter which they have in there. And that level of, I think it was that barrier. However, it does come a little bit late for what is a pairing that I wish I could see. Michael Owen and Eileen Drury. Where he's paired up with it, he's like, I'm not listening to that space-time gobbledygook.
That is a sketch. Oh, God, I would give £1 million to be a fly on the wall at that moment to hear Michael Owen versus Eileen Drury.
Did this book change you? Tash, I'm going to come to you last. Jack, did it change you?
Yep, it really did. It completely changed my opinion of Michael Owen. From 2014 onwards, where he goes into therapy, I was like, okay, he's a decent person now. And it really, it made me, when he talks about, like, punditry at BT, I was like, okay, I'm on board with you now.
Yeah.
He even makes fun of his own punditry
at one point.
Genuinely, when we were recording this last week, recording episode 2 last week, I was so prepared to be absolutely furious with him, with everything he was trying to do. And when I can't believe he's done this.
Yeah.
Quote that viral video. I'm both angry and delighted.
I just punched
around
Jack's face before that. Yeah, that's how it goes. I agree. Well, you know, look, I'm not going to brag, but I did say, I told you so. I knew it was coming.
You read the third book before us.
I actually hadn't finished it by the time I did that, but I knew that...
He'd read enough.
I read enough, yeah, that's true. But I knew him better. The book did change me. I've totally changed my opinion of Michael Owen, and now he's a 3D person to me, yeah, which I really like. James.
I agree. I learned more about him. I sympathize with him. I felt like he showed who he is a little bit.
Yeah.
And it changed my opinion of him quite a lot. The second book, I wish he'd never brought out that second book.
Yeah.
I wish this was the one. Because
the jump from 1 to 3 is like, okay, I can understand because you're smash hits.
He's a teenager and then he's a
Two Muddies things.
In fairness, no mugs are buying that book anymore. So
that's true.
Tash, did it change you?
I now like him less.
Wow.
But it did change you in some way.
It did, because I don't know if you remember, but last week.
You're in love with him.
I didn't love the book, but I understood where he was coming from, and I kind of appreciated his take on things. And I feel like instead of looking forward, all he did was just navel gaze himself into misery. It was like reading bloody James Joyce. I was like, come on, mate. Like, have a laugh. You're a millionaire footballer. Get over yourself a bit, you know?
I do know what you mean. And I totally disagree.
Although I hated the second book, and I hated him in the second book.
I didn't like him in the second book, but I thought he was kind of a flawed protagonist, whereas now I just think he's a miserable bastard.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Well, either way, I'm very proud of all of us.
Yes,
we got through all of it all, and the depth we've managed to get out of Michael Owen is
impressive. Now think he's three-dimensional, though,
yes,
which I definitely didn't before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I totally agree. Score out of 10. Go on, Tash. Kick us off with your one because it's going to be low.
I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay. Jack?
I'm going to give it an 8. I can't believe it. Okay.
I'm giving it a 9. I'm giving it a 9. I am giving it a 9. I thought it was great.
Imagine if I said 3 again.
Yeah. Kick up in here.
I was lying. It's a 3.
James?
7.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. 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 It's not quite as big as I thought it was going to get. So it's got 12. What was it? 5, 7, 8, 9.
That's
pretty good. It's got the same as Cammy and Ozil, basically. Yeah. And way up from Off the Record. And
who the winner is of this whole series.
We do. It's a joint victory for Karen Brady and Dean Windass.
Yes!
Together at last. Together at last.
That would be a Strictly combination I would like to see.
For the quiz this week, you're all named after different Michael Owens we've met along the way.
Okay.
Our journey. Jack, you're clean-cut Michael Owen.
Clean-cut Michael Owen.
Tash, you're bad boy Michael Owen.
Oh, yeah.
This week. And James, you're Michael Owen beating up a 10-year-old. He was also 10 at the time. He was also 10 at the time.
Fine, really.
Question number 1. What motto was written above the door in Glenn Hoddle's England canteen?
Oh, God. I feel like I remember this. It was something really stupid. Clean cut, Michael Owen.
Yep.
Be good at football.
It's not that. It's canteen focused. The answer was chew to win.
Chew to win. Oh, my God.
Chew to win.
Oh,
chew
God.
Boiled pasta to win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Question 2. What does Michael say his best ever performance in his career was?
Oh, a clean cut Michael Owen.
Yep.
It was a European match.
Yep.
Against... Oh, God.
I'm trying to eke it out of you.
It wasn't Roma, was it? No.
Nope, not great. Anyone else got it?
Bad boy Michael Owen.
Bad boy.
Was it when he was 8 in primary school? He loves that one.
I mean, that's probably one of them, but not in this book. But I think that is, you know, he definitely does think that. The answer is, and you're blanking this week, it was a UEFA Cup 4th round, 2nd leg, 2001, against Porto at home.
Porto! Yes. Oh,
gem of the game, James, a Liverpool fan?
Of course I don't.
No.
It was quite an innocuous match, but he felt like every just
played very well, Question number 3. When Michael almost moved back to Liverpool in 2005, which Liverpool player's house did he meet the club executive at?
Clean cut Michael Owen. Bruno Giroud.
Bruno Giroud is correct.
Because that was such a weird place.
Very strange.
It's a neutral venue, but let's go to Bruno Giroud's house. Like it's the DMZ.
It was bizarre. And finally, a little bit of a different question. How many pages in total of Michael Owen books have we read? Closest wins.
Bad boy Michael Owen.
You get 2 points if you get this. I'm going to give you all. What do you think? What do you think?
I think...
Let's start with Bad Boy Michael Owen.
1,010.
No, nonsense.
This one was long.
Michael Owen beating up a 10-year-old. What's your guess?
923.
And Jack, what do you think?
I'm going to go with 850.
I can tell you...
because I said it's worth 2 points. Victory, winning the quiz this week is Michael Owen beating up a 10-year-old. No! Very close. 912 is the answer. You got 923. That's very impressive.
Okay, wait, hang on. Your version didn't have those extra pages.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So he's incorrectly worked it out, and I was going for
was
the full-length version.
Was it 912? Because my first thought was 913. I promise. No! I now bumped
spooky.
It up a bit.
Spooky. What, are you living at Freddie Shepherd's house?
Whoa! Let's not nip here, James Belgian.
As a reward, you get Ken Zong this
yes!
week.
Yay!
You remember Ken.
James, can you get on the table for this?
Yeah, come on, jumping up. I've set Ken his own challenge for the Michael Owen trilogy. He's going to write us three Michael Owen chants, one every week. Here's his last one, to the tune of The Jam's Going Underground. I'm about to sing this in front of a whole pub.
Do it.
And it starts kind of the bridge moment. Oh, we're so happy and he's so fine. Around the box, up and down the line. He wrote the textbook on Goal Sublime. And the cop end gets what the cop end wants. When he sniffs a chant, you know he's on the hunt. I've sung this wrong. Owen's on the prowl. Owen's on the prowl. When the young lad plays, he lights up the ground. Owen's on the prowl.
Owen's on the prowl.
When he scores a goal, we're going to sing his name till tomorrow.
La, 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 la.
Oh, there we go. Ken Zong. Ken Zong. Ken Zong. Ken Zong. I forgot there's a chant in the second book, which Michael mentions at the Bernabeu, and I have no idea how it goes. There's not a Ken Zong one.
Yeah.
It goes, Michael, full stop, Michael Owen, ... Owen. Owen. Anyone knows the chant for that? Let
us
know.
Palindrome. It's so weird. Oh, bizarre.
And that's it. That's the Michael Owen trilogy done. That's the last book of our series. We only met next week at the final episode of the series, our end of series awards, where we're dishing our prize for the best, worst, and weirdest moments in books so far. The ones that we've covered this series anyway. We're not quite done on Owen either. We're going to call 20 minutes extra Owen action now, exclusive Football Book Club. Club members, if you haven't already joined, basically, you can access all our bonus chapter episodes as well as exclusive events and get your own Football Book Club bookmark, all for the going rate of a copy of Darren Huckabee's Hux. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub to find out more. If you've read any of these books, if you want to get in contact with us, you know, praise us for getting through all these things.
No, if you've read the Owen one, I don't care. Don't tell me.
If you've read the Owen one, we can share our love for him now.
We can all do it together.
Don't at me in that one.
Get in touch with us on Twitter @FootyBookClub, Instagram @FootballBookClub, and on Facebook, or email us at fbc@crowdnetwork.co.uk. Guys, any last words?
Michael Owen beats up 10-year-olds.
Okay. Any non-libelous ones? Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, James Baldwin, Natasha Daniels, and Jack Bernhardt. It was created by James Bug, and it was a Crowd Network production. Thanks to Michael for writing all three books, but where is everyone now? Well, Michael Owen is now a pundit for BT Sport, runs a successful stables, and argues with Cesc Fabregas on Twitter. He still hasn't seen the second Jurassic Park, what a shame. David Beckham is one of the most famous faces on the planet, but we're still none the wiser if he has Michael Owen's number. Alan Shearer, on the other hand, leads it long, long ago. Kevin Keegan is out of management, but still tours the country challenging unsuspecting England players to games of head tennis. Michael Jones is still Michael's best friend, genuinely, as revealed in Reboot, very sweet. Lara Croft has undergone several transformations since the late 90s, to the point Michael probably wouldn't even recognise her anymore. Sander Westerveld now runs a CEX in Amsterdam, and production on the Jaguar XKR stopped in 2014, RIP. The theme music Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is used in a Creative Commons 4.0 licence. We'll be back next week with the last episode of the series. Until then, bye-bye.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.